This is show number 4 of Home Sweet Farm Radio, The War on Bugs. Coming to you from the local food front of Washington County, Texas, this is Brad Stufflebean, also known as Farmer Brad. Stick around, folks. It's going to be a great show today. You're going to enjoy it. Well, we're back, and here we are today. I wanted to share with you my interview with Dr. Will Allen. He's an author of a new book called War on Bugs, published by Chelsea Green Publishings. And Mr. Allen is an organic farming visionary. He really is a true activist, an entrepreneur, an expert. He understands the complexities of farming firsthand and the impact that commercialization has had on agriculture. And his new book has just been released from the preface, quote, "The Secret History of Pesticides Revealed, How Farmers and Consumers Have Been Conned by Government, Industry, and Warmongering Jargon into Choosing Toxic Food," end quote. You're going to find this a fascinating interview, and I really encourage you to get the book. We have links to it there on the website. Also, for reference, Dr. Allen is on the board of the Organic Consumers Association and has also been involved in sustainable cotton production, promoting it across the country for a long time. So listen up to my interview with Dr. Will Allen, and I hope you enjoy it.
Really appreciate you being with me here and joining us here for the show. And I first came to find out about you about last year. I was having a conversation with Ronnie Cummins at the OCA, and I was the former president of the Texas Organic Farmers Association here, and we were looking for speakers for our next upcoming conference, and you came highly recommended, and I think that was even before your book had come out. He was all excited about this book that was going to be coming out, And it's really an interesting topic, the war on bugs and really a whole review of our history of how chemical warfare is basically being introduced to our agricultural enterprise. How long have you been farming?
Well, I grew up on a farm, and we raised pigs and just a whole bunch of other stuff, but mostly vegetables and melons. And then, you know, they started paving Southern California, and so my folks, you know, couldn't farm anymore just because of the noise abatement rules and regulations and smell abatements. I mean, you couldn't have chickens crowing in the morning and so forth. So they decided to stop farming, and I figured I better get an education, so I went to school and studied tropical forest farmers, so I didn't go too far away, but anyway, you know, like I taught school for several years, and then I really wanted to farm, so I started farming again, and I've been farming since 72, full-time, and before that I, you know, played around with it, but that wasn't my occupation. It was my avocation.
Now, so, you said you're farming in Vermont. You've been there for the past 8 years.
Right. We got this opportunity to develop this local production for local use farms, you know, and, you know, try to sell everything locally and, you know, try to provide food for more than just the 6 months that farmers usually provide food in Vermont. And so we're trying to do these season extenders on both ends of the seasons. And so it's an exciting farm because we're trying to train a bunch of young people how to farm. You know, I mean, we're lucky we grew up on farms. And if you didn't, it's really hard to, you know, learn all those techniques and rhythms, you know, that farming requires.
So, and your farm, besides selling to the CSA, you both also have a farm stand, and I noticed you also have a cafe on site.
Right, we have a little coffee shop, and, you know, we do events in there. We do poetry readings and music, and you know, we try to do a whole bunch of different local events. We do a strawberry festival and a pumpkin festival, and then we do dinners in the field, and because we're, you know, all about celebrating food, you know, and like, you know, here we are producing all these hundreds of different kinds of vegetables and melons and strawberries and blueberries, and you know, so we just incorporate that in all the events that we do, and it gives you this, you know, value added, and plus it gives you this outreach to the community, so that the community starts, you know, being strung out on food. You know, that's what we want to get people to do.
I noticed reading into your book here, the research, or how did you become interested in researching, you know, the work here for your book on the background of chemical agriculture?
Well, you know, we were, for like 13 years, we ran this sustainable cotton project, and that project was designed to help farmers switch over to organic cotton production in California and Texas and the Mid-South, and even in the Deep South. And but most of our emphasis was on the Mid-South and California, because Texas had a lot of support from the Texas Department of Agriculture. So we helped farmers learn how to, you know, stop using chemicals on cotton. And then we taught the clothing companies that they should use organic cotton. So we got Patagonia to switch over. And when we did this this whole project with cotton, we would give tours in the San Joaquin Valley and in the Mid-South and show people how incredibly toxic cotton was and how people were getting sick and how many airplanes, crop dusters were in the air at one time. And people were just amazed. And they said, look, how did people get comfortable with this? I mean, how did this get to be standard operating procedure? You know, I mean, that we're just spraying, you know, willy-nilly, like 6, 7, 8, 9 airplanes in the air at a time, and some of them even sprayed the bus. I mean, it was classic. I mean, it couldn't have been better propaganda for, like, this is how you shouldn't farm, right? And then we would take people to organic cotton farms and show them the dramatic difference. When people started asking that whole comfort level question, I didn't really have an answer. I mean, almost everybody I talked to said, well, it all started after the Second World War, but then we started asking old farmers, and old farmers said, oh, no, it's way older than that, you know, because I remember that the big farmers are using pesticides when I grew up. And so all these old farmers said, oh, here are my collections of farm magazines from the Pacific Rural Press and California Farmer and, you know, Farm Journal and all this stuff. And so I went through all those, and then I found out that they had big collections of them at University of California, Davis, and they were still in the stacks where you could actually Xerox the actual magazines. And so we went back and found magazines all the way to 1810, which was the first farm magazine in the country. And, you know, by the 1830s and 40s, there was a lot of propaganda for chemicals, and most of the chemicals were waste chemicals from industry and mining, and they just started dumping it willy-nilly on farms, you know, waste potash that was muriate of potash, which is totally toxic, but it's potash, you know, and so chemically it's, you know, the same as the potash that people were already using. And then they found all this phosphorus, and then they had all this arsenic and lead from flue gas, from, you know, smelting of iron and copper. And those they made into either paint pigments, or then they started dumping it on food. And they just, you know, they dumped millions of pounds of it, because they started using arsenic in 1867, and by the 1890s they were using lead arsenic. And because they found out that arsenic killed the Colorado potato beetle, but lead arsenic killed the gypsy moth. And so, and then they started having all this reaction, you know, which was the community was saying, man, people are dying from arsenic poisoning, and people are getting sick, and whole communities would come down with, you know, arsenic poisoning. And And so there started to be this safe food movement at before the turn of the 20th century. And so I just started looking at it and saying, wow, this is how people are so comfortable with it. It's so old. And then one of the major comfort level people in that whole story is Dr. Seuss, because while all the rest of the country was fighting against arsenic and lead and poisons on all the food, Dr. Seuss was selling pesticides for Standard Oil. And he was, you know, on the other side, making people feel, hey, it's okay, you can gargle with it, you know, you can spray it on each other, it's a joke, you know. And and then on the other side are these muckrakers all the way from Upton Sinclair to the founders of the Consumers Union were all railing about pesticides in the teens and 20s and 30s, you know, early part of the
century. So we usually attribute the general idea is that the use of chemical agriculture began during the Green Revolution, but you found that it actually goes back, you know, maybe 200 years ago.
Yeah, well, they started promoting arsenic in France in the 1700s, and it, you know, it killed so many people and it toxified so much land because they were using it, you know, like really in really strong concentrations. And so France banned it until after it was reused again in the United States in the 1860s, 70s, and 80s. And then by the 1890s, the French let it back in again because it was shown to be so effective against Colorado potato beetle and grape leaf hopper and so forth. So, I mean, my argument with all this is like, boy, this is old. And the thing is that people have gotten used to depending on these quick fix agricultural products that are, you know, incredibly toxic. I mean, you know, remember when Rachel Carson was railing about DDT and all the Second World War chemicals, she was also railing about arsenic in that same book, Silent Spring, because she knew that it was a really old chemical that was doing serious damage, but that had developed resistance. So DDT was the problem of the day during her time. But, you know, my argument is, like, we need to get rid of all of these chemicals. These chemicals are, you know, have been deadly for 160 years, and they're, you know, they're incredibly deadly today. And, like, what's happened? As the pesticides over the years have shown resistance, that is, you know, the insects have developed a tolerance or the weeds have developed a tolerance, they now are reduced to using the strongest possible chemicals in agriculture. So if you look at, you know, if you look at the top chemicals, for example, in carrots in California, California keeps track. 70% of all the chemicals used on carrots are one chemical, methamsodium, the same chemical that killed all those people in Bhopal. You know, that's, it's, you know, this carbamate that is a nerve poison. Mm-hmm. And 70% of all the chemicals used on carrots is methamsodium, and then the other chemicals used are chloropicrin, which is tear gas. And the other one is 1,3-dichloropropane telone 2, right? And so here are these, the worst chemicals in the world account for 93% of all the pesticides used on carrots. Three chemicals, you know, and three of the worst chemicals. And that's the same as if you look at strawberries or you look at, and the strawberries, it's really terrible because they use 335 pounds of chemicals per acre. You know, they just recently did this study of kids in Seattle, and they finally did it the third time. They did it in 2005, 2006, and 2007, and the results are just out now in 2008, and in every one of those tests, when kids were fed produce from off the supermarket shelves, all of them showed up with organophosphates in their urine and in their saliva. All of them. I mean, and so, like, you know, just food from off the shelf has these incredibly toxic nerve poisons in them. And, like, you know, now we have an organic movement. There's really no choice for people to keep eating poisoned food. It's like, you know, how much do you want to pay for breaks? Do you want to buy budget breaks or do you want to buy safe breaks? If you have your kids riding around, right, Well, how much do you want to pay for food? Do you want to buy budget food that's poison, or do you want to buy organic food that's not poison? You know, and like, we really need to start protecting people. People are, you know, I mean, if kids are getting organophosphates just from eating food that's right off the shelf, I mean.
Well, who is most gained from this sort of agriculture?
Oh, the chemical companies. I mean, there've been bankruptcies, but they're really like takeovers. They're not really bankruptcies. Those companies end up walking away with millions, billions even. You know, and so like, and most of the dominant companies that were there at the start are there in one form or another now. You know, I mean, like Bayer Aspirin's still there, and BASF is still there, and Horst is still there, and, you know, like Syngenta's Ciba Geigy Sandoz, that's the basis of that, and then they, you know, grabbed up AstraZeneca and, you know, a few other French and English companies, right? But all of those chemical companies really have a family tree going way back, and those people made money. It didn't matter whether it was in the middle of the 1894 panic. They were hiring people at Graceline's, and they were one of the top chemical companies, right? And so, you know, like our feeling is like the big agriculture has made out with this, but it's like the public has suffered. The public is, I mean, you see what our kids look like. I mean, they're obese, they're, you know, they're eating bad food. I mean, hello. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. Of course, rocket scientists today are crashing, so I'm not sure that's the best analogy, but, you know, we need to, you know, like, alert people, look, buyer beware, this stuff is terrible. And like, you know, I've been around farming enough, and I've farmed with chemicals and without chemicals, and man, you know, it just, we really have to tell people, look, we need to reinvigorate the spirit of Rachel Carson. We need to stop using all of this chemical food. See, when Rachel Carson was talking in the 60s, there was no organic movement. We didn't have a sophisticated organic movement, which we have right now, and that is growing by leaps and bounds, you know. And like, we have answers to eating cheap poison food, because it's not cheap. In the long run, you pay subsidies for that cheap food, and you're going to pay the doctor.
Well, without the subsidies, that cheap food couldn't exist, and that sort of farming is not a sustainable model of farming. But how could consumers get more informed on the hazards of that food and those alternatives? I mean, we are seeing right now, you know, a peak of awareness, you know, with recent books, with Michael Pollan's books, and local food awareness is really skyrocketed the last couple of years. But, mm-hmm. you know, I know the Organic Consumers Association is a good resource. And what other resources would you send people to?
Well, the Center for Food Safety, and then, you know, like, we're going to have stuff on our website all the time. We're just going to keep adding stuff. One of the things we felt like what we ought to add is foreign ads. Just give people a perspective. Look, you might think that the food from Chile is safe, but these are the chemicals they're using in Chile, right? You know, these are the ads for the chemicals they're using in Chile. So I've collected ads from Chile and Argentina and India. And then the other thing we're doing is, like, we're doing a weekly, you know, pesticide and fertilizer toxicity report. Because, like, every week something comes out that is just, you know, horrific almost. You know, and, you know, this whole thing with testing the kids' urine and saliva, and finding all these organophosphates in it. And then, you know, they just came out with a report that if you've been around pesticides for more than 250 days in your life, you're 60% more likely to get Parkinson's. And they've just come out with this other report that not just the pigs are becoming antibiotic resistant, but so are the pig farmers. And, you know, in a Canadian study, like 24.9% of the pigs were antibiotic resistant, and 20% of the farmers, holy God, 1 in 5 pig farmers were antibiotic resistant, you know. And like, it's just like, you know, stuff is out of control. And so what we're trying to do is, like, you know, have a weekly, you know, pesticide exposure report. And
so you're going to do that on your website there?
Yeah. I mean, we're just building our website right now, but the website is www.thewaronbugsbook.com.
Thewaronbugsbook.com.
Yeah. Because, well, there have been so many war on bugs. If you hit war on bugs, you'll hit bring up about 2,600,000 hits. So, because there have been so many wars on bugs, see, by, you know, local communities, governments, state agencies. There's one going on right now in California against the light brown apple moth, which has never damaged one single piece of fruit.
Yeah, what can you tell us about that? I know I've been seeing they're talking about spraying, what is it, hormones over the... No, well, pheromones, I'm
pheromones.
Sorry.
They're going to spray pheromones, but the carrier of the pheromones is something that volatilizes the pheromone so it spreads out and, you know, provides more of a confusing effect. But people got sick from the, you know, the volatilizing chemical that they used to spread the pheromone. So they said, well, why don't you do it from the ground? And, you know, it's a fight that's going to go on. And, you know, nobody has shown anybody yet that the light brown apple moth is a problem. They blew it up into a pest in New Zealand like about 20 years ago using pheromones first. And then when they couldn't control it with that, they started spraying it. And it got to be a major pest. And then they started using biological control on it. And they stopped spraying, and they found these beneficial insects that would attack the light brown apple moth. And now they get only about 20% hatch-outs. And if you only have that many hatch-outs, birds and other predators are going to take care of those.
And so these pheromones have shown not to be effective.
Effective in other places. And, like, here they are, you know, using this. It's a chemical company, Boondoggle. You asked me earlier who's made out in all this. In almost all these situations, it doesn't matter if farmers go bankrupt. Chemical companies go to the bank.
Right.
You know, so
there's more money to be made in the pheromones for sure rather than beneficial insects.
Or rather than doing it from the ground. If you apply the pheromones from the ground, you don't have to use the volatilizing chemical, and they're, you know, that's approved for certified organic farmers. I mean, it's a legal pheromone, but if you apply it the wrong way, you know, you can work on it forever. It's never going to be legal. It's like the whole thing with people saying, oh, you ought to wash your food because then you can get the chemicals off. Well, 90% of the chemicals we use are you know, systemic chemicals. They go right into the system of the fruit. I mean, you could wash right down to the seed and you wouldn't get rid of all of it.
So you're on book tour now. Are you planning on coming to Texas anytime soon?
I'd love to come to Texas. I totally love Austin. Yeah, I mean, because I spent a lot of time in Texas working on the cotton project. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'd love to come down anytime. If you can find me any gigs, drop me a line.
Yeah, we'd love to have you. And, of course, you probably don't want to come down here in August, but maybe when cooler weather, when you want to get away from that cold winter in Vermont, it's a good time to come down to Texas. That's for sure.
But August wouldn't be bad. I mean, I don't mind. I'll come any time, and, you know, just the only time I won't come is when you have cedar fever.
Well, I appreciate you being with us today, and looking forward to seeing you in Texas sometime. And on our website, we'll put a link to your website and also to your book. Folks can find your book at Chelsea Green Publishing. It's just been out it just came out this winter, in fact.
Yeah, it's only been out like a month and a half. So, I mean, thanks a lot for having me on. I really appreciate it. And, you know, us farmers have to stick together.
Yeah, we sure do, and appreciate the work that you've done, and encourage folks to check out your book. It's very insightful, and, you know, again, you didn't even really mention how it's just chock full of illustrations, all of these ads that you've done research, you know, going back well over 100 years of how they have marketed chemicals to the farmers and telling them, convincing them that it was a good thing to do. It's just kind of... propagandizing, really. That's, and they used to call it that. They don't call it that anymore.
Yeah, they admitted what they were doing, and now they try to hide it. Oh, no, we're not propagandizing. Right.
Now it's just good marketing. Well, thanks a lot, and I appreciate it, and you have a wonderful afternoon.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mr. Allen. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Will Allen, The War on Bugs. Hope you enjoyed that. You can visit our website at homesweetfarm.com. Click on our podcast channel for Home Sweet Farm Radio and get some links there to pick up your copy of his new book provided by Chelsea Green Publishings. Do a Google on Will Allen, War on Bugs, and you'll have no problem finding it. Other resources there are also available on some of the things that Dr. Allen mentioned today. And join us next week as I have Mark Castell of Cornucopia Institute. We'll be talking about the new regulations that will be putting small farmers out of business, our ability to raise greens and leafy greens, the draconian standards that is produced for industrial scale farms due to the E. coli breakout in spinach in California a year ago is certainly not small farmer friendly. So learn how leafy greens and lettuces will be a thing of the past, no longer available in local farmers markets due to these regulations. So join us next week. Thanks a lot. Eat well, visit your farmers markets, and listen to us next time at Home Sweet Farm Radio. Have a great day.